partly cloudy, with a low around 67, a west wind about 6 miles an hour, becoming calm in the evening. Chance of rain is 60%. New precipitation between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except higher amounts possible when we have thunderstorms. Sunday, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3. Mostly sunny with a high of 83, light northwest wind increasing 11 to 16 miles an hour in the morning. Chance of rain is 20%, and then Sunday night, low around 60. And then just in time for work on Monday, bright, sunny, and nice with a low of around 60. And, you know, we might just get up to 65 degrees on Sunday, and Monday night, chance of rain after 3 a.m., partly cloudy with a low of 65. And then Tuesday, when I've got to go to Newark, might get some showers before 9 o'clock, partly sunny with a high near 88. And we're hoping the weather stays nice all week. But remember, we've got Independence Day coming up. And as always, a weatherman is hedging his bets. A chance of showers and thunderstorms on Thursday. Partly sunny, high near 89. 40% chance of rain, so might just dampen those fireworks. And Thursday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Low of around 89, chance of rain is 40 degrees. And I'm taking that Friday off because it's going to be partly sunny with a high near 88. So we got some weather coming up that's going to be unpleasant for a little bit. Watch out for lightning. Remember how to drive, you know, not to drive through flooded streets and roads. Stay alive and turn around. And now we're going to talk some sports. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the United Kingdom. We've got the Yankees and the Red Sox playing some baseball in London Stadium, a very unusual thing. But, you know, they're trying to get baseball over into other venues so that they can make even more money or have even more people enjoy the game. So the Red Sox and the Yankees flew over there yesterday. Drove around and got to see Buckingham Palace, look at the buses and the architecture, went to a party at the Tower of London where I've been, and it's worth seeing. And now it's time to focus on baseball. The first game is going to start Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and the second game will be Sunday at 10:10 in the morning. Both of these promise to be important games in the American League East standing, so those of you who have gotten up on the, I think, late side on Sunday morning. You've got a baseball game to watch or to listen to on the radio if you are heading somewhere. The first place Yanks right now are 52-28, and this is where they can begin to really crush the third place Red Sox, who are 9 games out. They could be 10 games out if the Yanks have 2 wins, or if the Red Sox can pick up 2 wins, they inch a little closer to the Yanks. The Red Sox are 44-38. And remember, the Red Sox started off doing pretty well in April and then kind of hit the skids. There's an old saying, you can't win the pennant in April, but you sure can lose it. So I think time will tell. Meanwhile, the Yankees have gotten back the wonderful batter, Aaron Judge. And he said, once we get between the lines and the game starts, it's game on. We're going to treat it just like that. It's tough being somewhere we're not familiar for a lot of guys, but we're all competitors. Once the game starts, we'll be out there just like the Red Sox, and we'll compete. The epic battles the teams have waged at Fenway and Yankee Stadium for almost 100 years now have become part of the game's history. Taking this rivalry to Europe is something that everybody is excited about on both teams and for all the fans. Mookie Betts said, we're excited to play here, being the first games in London. And it'll be interesting seeing how he plays that right field in London Stadium. It's still another game that we have to take seriously and go out and win, he said, and he's definitely excited. Electricity between these two battle-tested teams has become accustomed to from playing in October. Red Sox right-hander Rick Porcello is going to be starting the first game, and he said that the media attention and the more of it, the hoopla around it, is very similar to what you see in the postseason. He feels there's a postseason vibe to these two games between the interviews and the cameras and all the extracurricular stuff you don't usually see in a regular season game. So the Red Sox are looking at this almost like a playoff game, and hopefully the Yankees are as well. So how can you hear the game or watch it? The opener is going to be on Fox with a first pitch at 1:10 tomorrow afternoon, Eastern Time. The second game will be on ESPN with an early Sunday morning time. I don't think 10 a.m. is early, but 10 a.m. Eastern Time is first pitch in Boston. The game can be heard on their flagship station, 93.7 WEEI, with Joe Castiglione, Sean McDonough, and Dave O'Brien. Two out of three Irish guys. How about that, Pat? Yankee fans will be able to hear it on the YES Network or WFAN radio at 101.9 FM or 66 on the AM band. And who's going to be starting? Like I told you, Rick Porcello is going to be starting for the Red Sox. He's been their veteran sinker baller since 2015, and he's a real leader in the clubhouse. Interestingly enough, he said, obviously, when I woke up this morning and looked towards tomorrow, it's getting me locked in mentally, preparing the way I ordinarily do, and do what I've got to do to give us a chance to win. He said he had a great time yesterday running around London, but as far as today and tomorrow goes, it's back to baseball as usual, getting focused and prepared the way he needs to. The second left-hander, Eduardo Rodriguez, is going to start the second game on Sunday. As in all of his seasons, he's displayed flashes of brilliance, and the Red Sox would like to see it more. Meanwhile, the Yankees have dubbed Masahiro Tanaka to start the first game. Tanaka's been among the club's most consistent performers since making his big league debut in 2014. Even though his trademark splitter has been so-so this year, they're looking forward to seeing him win because he's been one of the more reliable Yankee pitchers. And as you know, the Yankees, strong team that they are having some problems with their pitching. The Yanks haven't decided who their starter is for the second game yet. But Boone says it'll probably be an opener like Chad Green, behind whom the Yankees are 7-0. It'll be interesting to see if the Yankees decide to use up all their relief pitchers in the second game, because I kind of like the baseball by committee pitching theory. You throw a reliever out there to start the game, let him pitch three innings, and then another one, and another one, and another one thereafter, and finish with your closer in the ninth inning, Aroldis Chapman. I like the idea that they're going to show off a lot of their relief talent, because I think relief pitching is the strength of the Yankee pitching lineup. Yankees are being allowed, as are the Red Sox, to carry a 26-player and two taxi squad players, so to speak. So the Red Sox brought Sam Travis up from Providence to give him a little bit more bench strength since Brock Holt is banged up and not going to play. Mitch Moreland and Steve Pierce are both on the Red Sox injured list, and right-hander Hector Velasquez and minor league catcher Oscar Hernandez are the two extra players they're bringing for the taxi squad. The Yankees brought along to London their infielder, outfielder, utility player, Tahiro Estrada, will be their 26th man. They've also called up catcher Kyle Higashioka and right-hander Chance Adams in the event of an injury, since obviously it's going to be a little tough to get from Scranton to London when it's a lot easier to get from Scranton to the Bronx. Now, some injuries. The Yankees welcome back Judge to the lineup this week because he had a great week. He's starting to get locked in, and he's starting to learn all over again how to hit the ball. But Giancarlo Stanton has once again strained his right knee during the homestand, so he may miss more than 2 weeks and probably a month. What's the impetus for this London series other than the baseball wants to make more money and have more fans? This is part of Rob Manfred's quest to grow the game globally. Saturday will be marking the first Major League Baseball game played in Europe, although there are some British who think that England is not part of Europe. And the hope is that this can turn England and other European countries onto baseball. Some people call it England. I sometimes call it that, but I also call it the United Kingdom. Perhaps the electricity and the excitement will help generate England and surrounding countries become more interested in baseball and get more younger guys to play baseball. It was recently announced that the Cubs and the Cardinals, longtime National League rivals, will play in the 2020 London series. It's very interesting because getting baseball over from Europe is a new not just a new thing. In Netherlands, a lot of people play baseball, and in fact, D.D. Gregorius of the Yankees was born in Holland. And usually you think of this as well. They play baseball in Aruba, which they play an awful lot of, and Xander Bogaerts is of the Red Sox is from Aruba. And that used to be part of the Netherlands, and now it's an independent country, although they do share the Dutch monarchy. On the other hand, both games are going to be at London Stadium, and this is an interesting venue, folks. This stadium was built in the for the 2012 Olympics and was used primarily for soccer since. The West Ham United soccer team and the British Premier League plays there, and the Premier League is the league with most of the superior teams, and unlike our leagues where we always have the same teams, unless you're the Milwaukee Brewers or the Houston Astros where you swap leagues, based on your record, your team either rises or falls in or out of the Premier League to some of the other leagues with the less skilled or less talented teams. The baseball field was built for the series on top of the pitch or the playing surface for soccer. They added artificial turf and dirt over the last few weeks, put up foul poles, and there's an awful lot of foul territory because of the way the stadium was built. It was built primarily for soccer and almost an oval like a traditional U.S. football stadium. So lots of foul territory to help the pitchers, but a fairly short center field fence, only 388 feet. So this ought to help anyone who hits a line drive to dead center field, even though Fenway dead center field is 379 feet. So there's 7 feet of extra, 7 or 9 feet, rather, of breathing room compared to Fenway, and maybe that will help some of the center fielders because there's a little bit more room to run, and of course they don't have to play anything off the green monster, the amazing left field wall in Fenway Park. London is far from Fenway, but the Red Sox are going to be the home team for two games as part of the deal that they made with the Yankees. So the Red Sox could have their first ever walk-off home run outside of the Boston area. It could also be the first time that they've ever traveled wearing their historic home whites, just like the Yankees are going to be wearing their home pinstripes. Due to Boston being the home team, the Yankees will visit Fenway only twice this year, instead of the usual three times that they go up there. When was the last time these teams played in a different continent? For the Sox, this would be just their second time playing outside of North America. The last time was 2008 in Tokyo when Red Sox manager Cora was a player for Boston. The Red Sox split those two games against the Oakland A's. And the Yankees' most recent regular season foray away from the United States mainland was in 2004 when they opened the season against Tampa Bay at the Tokyo Dome. They split those games. They dropped the opener before Hideki Matsui homered in a second game in a 12-1 win. London's a great city, and it's a great sports city. There's passion there for soccer, rugby, and cricket, some horse racing, and Londoners also enjoy boxing. There's a very big boxing scene over in the U.K. This week, and fans are going to think of this as a novelty, even though there are a lot of Americans who live in the U.K. or might want to go see a ball game. Baseball is also broadcast from time to time in the United Kingdom, and that also includes Australian baseball, which is very much like our game. London's a great city if you've ever visited. I've been there 6 times. You can certainly see all the traditional things like the changing of the guard, the London Eye, walk over the bridge, the Tower of London, see the outside of Buckingham Palace. You can also take tours of Kensington Palace, where Prince Charles is supposed to live. And a lot of very good theater, particularly around Leicester Square, where if you wait long enough, the cheap seats go on sale. London also has great pubs, interesting pub food, good beer, and London's easy to get around. And you know the taxi drivers in London are excellent. They have to pass what's called the knowledge before they're allowed to be cab drivers. So what happens is that the folks who take taxis in London are pretty much guaranteed that someone is, if you know your address, someone's going to know how to get you there who's in the cab. So that's why one of the reasons I like London. Again, I've been there a lot. It's a good place. You can have a really good time. One of the very cool things about London is they have a tremendous rock music scene, particularly in some of the clubs. You can hear just about any type of music you want, like the 17th century writer Jonathan Swift said, "He who is tired of London is tired of life." You can see some awfully good things in London. I've been to a soccer match in Wembley Stadium. I watched about 10 minutes of cricket on TV, and have to tell you, it makes no sense. I don't understand the game, but that's my fault, not cricket's fault. The other very cool thing about London is it is easy to get around on the London Underground, which we call the subway if we're from New York like I am. My take on London is it's a good sports town. You can have a real good time there. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit more about baseball. The Yanks have had the upper hand so far against the Sox, and they've won 4 out of 5, all at Yankee Stadium. The Yanks haven't been shut out in 162 games, so that's probably the sixth longest stretch in the modern baseball era since 1900. One of the guys to watch is going to be Red Sox third baseman Rafael Devers, who's been Boston's great all-around hitter this season. He's gone 7-for-9 recently with 4 doubles in his last 2 games. He's 22 years old, and he's fun to watch. He's very athletic around third base in the hot corner. The Sox still have trouble with their bullpen. Their best reliever last year was Matt Barnes, but right now he's struggling, and he's got a 7.82 earned run average for the month of June. Pressure's mounting on the Red Sox to add some bullpen help, just like it is with the Yankees for pitching help because of all the injuries. So we've got to take a good hard look at what's going to happen. We're hoping that the Red Sox and the Yankees make it a good game. And since I'm a Yankee fan, I want the outcome to be in doubt until the last pitch. And I want the Yankees to win both games and bury those Sox a little deeper. Moving down the coast to another formerly British city, Philadelphia, let's talk about Bryce Harper. Bryce is hitting pretty well. He had a great season last year. But people are starting to learn how to pitch to him. When Harper makes contact with the ball, he really clobbers it. It's his first season at Philly, but it's not going as well as 2015 did. So far, he's hitting 246, whereas in 2015, he hit 330. It's not terribly hard to see. Even in baseball, where strikeouts don't matter nearly as much as they once did, he's striking out an awful lot. 3 years ago, he struck out about 18% of the time, and this year, he's striking out 27.8% of the time. It's a problem, and it's a big problem because teams are figuring out how to pitch for him. He's not getting caught looking as much. He's simply swinging and missing. So what are they doing? There's been a strategy here. Right now there's no more first pitch fastballs that they're throwing to him because he's hit almost 200 home runs in his career. The second thing, of those first pitch home runs, 29 of them, nearly two-thirds, have come on fastballs. So they're giving him fewer first-pitch fastballs. He's now seeing breaking balls or off-speed stuff on the first pitch nearly half the time. And, you know, when people watch the tape, they get a good idea of what he hits and what he doesn't hit. And then before there's 2 strikes on him, he's seeing even more breaking balls and more off-speed pitches. Additionally, that seems to be working, although he's getting on base here and there, he's not able to drive the ball. But once you've got 2 strikes on Harper, now comes the fastball. And even though they're throwing fewer fastballs to most players when there are 2 strikes, Harper's seeing more and more of them. So there's being a lot more strategy to this game and to pitching to him. So he's going to see, he's going to have to make an adjustment. When they throw these fastballs high and outside, he seems to miss it on two strikes. In 2018, statistically, no hitter offered and missed at more two-strike high and outside fastballs than Bryce Harper. So this seems to be where his weakness is, and this is where when the Phillies got swept by Miami, where they were pitching him to him. So this is an interesting problem. Harper may need to slow it down or not try to overextend and just not try to drive the ball but simply make contact. Harper cut down on his strikeout problem earlier in June because in April he whiffed a third of the time, and in May, again a third of the time. In June, he's now back down to 20%, so he's starting to figure it out. He's got to figure out exactly what he needs to do on simply making contact and not trying to drive the ball as he ordinarily would do, because as you can see, when he does get a hit, he's a big, strong guy, and he can really drive the ball. Harper is an excellent outfielder. He gets a real good jump on the ball. He's actually improved as an outfielder. His arm is still stronger. He's hitting 12% better than most people, and he's probably going to be an all-star. The Phils have talked as a team about getting better on the on fastballs generally. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to those fighting Phillies. Meanwhile, the Mets, the team that puts the fun in dysfunctional, look like they are sinking slowly in the National League East. So let's talk about them in 1 minute, but we're going to need to run a few commercials first. So let me hit that money button here.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Yeah, well, right now we're hurting a little bit, but it should be kind of interesting to see what's going to happen. It should be interesting to see what happens in London. Yeah, I had a closing that ran late, and this traffic comes from.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today?
I got
consider taking an advertisement out on 100
in
Chamber
in.
Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business.
7 days
contact
of
the Chamber today at 908-782-7115,
yeah,
or
I
give us an email
stay
at info at 100-chamber.org.
Sunday,
you're listening to WHCR DB,
Hunterdon
Chamber
Radio.com.
Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce,
want to go,
the voice
I'll
of business.
Wake up and I don't
hello,
know,
this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
My new para doesn't start till a week from Monday.
Did you know that
so
one
I'm
of
like
five
going
people
nuts
are affected by mental illness?
I got Cheryl coming in.
NAMI
Hunterdon
is the locally affiliate for NAMI,
and
the National Alliance on
you
Mental
know, I'm
Illness.
Catching as catch can.
We are all volunteers,
and I'm
all our programs are free
of
charge.
Practice.
We offer family to family,
it's
a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908 284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer family-to-family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Hi, we're back. It's the Sports Guys. I'm Bill Wolfson with my colleague, John Manfreda. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Bill. And so, it's an exciting sports weekend.
It is in London.
Welcome back to that.
I've been talking about London for a while, but let's talk a little, since it's so hot, I feel the need to cool off. So let's talk about ice hockey.
Hockey it is.
Okay. What about those Devils? You picked up one of my favorite defensemen, P.K. Subban.
Well, better than that, and that's a good move. But I'm not sure. I don't think it cost them a whole lot. But they had the number one overall pick in the NHL draft and are taking Jack Hughes.
Yeah, who was a good choice also.
As an excellent forward, big, fast, incredible playmaker, the clear-cut number number one players. Really a two-player draft. The Rangers will get the other guy picking two. And, you know, Bill, my team won three cups in 9 years, but in the last 5 years, we've gotten three number one picks. So we've traded, we're becoming the Houston Astros, getting the number one overall pick. And then sooner or later, the Astros got good again. So what we're hoping is that competitive hockey will return to New Jersey. And you're right, picking up Subban on defense will clearly help.
I think he's going to make up for the fact that Corey Schneider is not Martin Brodeur.
I think that's a fair point. And quite frankly, Bill, Corey has had a decent career.
He sure has.
Four or five good years, but he's been a bit of a disappointment. When we got him from Vancouver for a number one pick, which was like the 10th overall pick in the draft, it wasn't a super hot pick. It was actually a great deal by Lou Lamoriello at the time. He stole Vancouver blind. But he's been okay, hasn't been great. Of course, he hasn't had a good team in front of him. And you summed it up. Yeah, there's been nobody to really replace Brodeur. But, you know, we're in a different era now, Bill. It's speed, it's size, and there's so many teams, whether you want to talk Nashville, now St. Louis, and St. I really thought the Bruins were going to run the Blues out of the rink. Skate around it because the Blues were bigger and tougher, but the Bruins were faster and better playmakers. But somehow the big bad Blues wound up, you know, winning that game 7 in Boston. In my view, it was a mild upset.
Well, you know something? It was a very exciting Stanley Cup final because Binnington made the difference for St. Louis. He really played over his head. We had some excellent, excellent playoff hockey. Remember, I give St. Louis a lot of credit. The Blues bounced back from a 5-1 beating on their own ice in front of their own fans. The fans, when they left the ice, cheered them, which I thought was a shot in the arm for the Blues. And they went into Boston and managed to recoup. So you have to admire those who bounce back.
When you lose game six, up 3-2, and lose game six, so often you lose game seven.
Well, remember, hockey is the streakiest of sports, as we've often discussed.
I've said, Bill, that if you win, you are more likely to win again. If you lose, you are more likely to lose that next game because, as you just said, it's a very, very streaky game.
It is indeed. Well, John, what do you think?
Streaky in the sense of momentum.
Exactly. Meanwhile, I'm going to ask again. I know I asked this before, but I'm going to ask it again because I'm going to sound like a broken record. Do you Giants fans miss Odell Beckham?
Well, you know, someone once said something about you're not going to have me to kick around anymore, and I think you might want to say that about OBJ in the sense that, it's as if he was never here. As quickly as he disappeared and was banished to a place called Cleveland, godforsaken place in Ohio, the New York media and the New York fans, Bill, to your point, have really just forgotten about it.
I think that's wise because, candidly, I was never fond of him as a player or as a personality. I think he's a very talented guy, but unfortunately, I didn't care for his talent.
I mean, the moves, the speed, but he did get injured a bit. He missed a lot of games, his antics off the field were extremely difficult and disruptive for the team, including the playoff loss in Green Bay, which many people, and probably
he did drop that ball.
The defense went down and Aaron Rodgers got hot. Pat's not here to give us a play-by-play rewind of that game, which I'm sure she could do, because when I saw her after that game, she had the biggest grin on her face because
she was my team.
After the Giants playing 28 minutes of beating the tar out of the Packers and being up, then they gave up a touchdown and a Hail Mary right at the end of the half, and that was all she wrote. The Packers ran away.
Well, that's the way it goes. You know, it's interesting what's going on in some of the other sports right now. I know that the training camp is still a month away for football. It's turning into July on Monday.
It's actually less than that. I think you're about
3 weeks.
2.5 weeks, Bill.
2-3 weeks, right? And, you know, we still have the team that's putting the fun and dysfunctional in the New York Mets, or the New York Jets of baseball.
Well, either one, it's interchangeable, Bill. Mets, Jets, pretty interchangeable. It's pretty sad.
Oh, I think so.
Pretty sad.
And,
actually, fit. Boston fans are thanking the New York Mets because, but for the New York Mets, the Red Sox have blown more saves than any other team in baseball.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. That's how you wind up 10 games behind the Yankees and finding yourself in London as the world champions, gasping for air. And it's the bullpen. They didn't address it. Matt Barnes had a stellar year last year. He's a great eighth inning pitcher. He's not a closer.
Well, that's for sure. But, you know, it's really, really, really funny. We had Mike Francesca going off on the Mets the other day saying fire every one of them.
Yeah, it's like burn a lot. It down. Yeah, for
yeah.
Sure. Torture.
You know, he's on WFAN. Todd Frazier's homer in the top of the ninth gave the Mets a 2-1 lead over the Phils, and Ahmed Rosario's ground out scored Dominic Smith for a 2-run cushion. And then the Mets went full Mets. Edwin Diaz gave up a 2-run homer to Michael Franco that knotted the score, and then a 3-run walk-off shot to Juan Segura to give the Phils a 6-3 win, completing Philly's 4-game sweep of our New York Mets. Luckily, Francesca was not only watching, but his heated reaction was live-streamed for everyone to enjoy. Unbelievable, he said. So this guy comes in and gives up 5 runs. Off to a pretty good start. Francesca only began, took his glasses off, and drove his point home even further. That sums it up. Fire them all. Don't even bring them back to New York. Let the bus go the other way, please. Let the 69 Mets take the field tomorrow. They'll do a better job against the Braves. This is unbelievable. Frazier hits one of the biggest home runs you could hit in your life, kept the Mets alive 2-1. They added an insurance run, 3-1 Mets, go to the bottom of the ninth. They traded to get this reliever. They bring Diaz in here. All he has to do is get an easy save against the bottom of the Phillies lineup. He commits a cardinal sin. He walks the first batter.
That's correct, Bill. Cardinal sin of any pitcher, especially a reliever in the ninth.
And then he, to the number 8th hitter, he grooves one that probably hasn't landed yet. It's still probably looking to be told what runway at Philadelphia International Airport to that ball to come down on. A 3-run jack to Segura on his 38th pitch for a reliever, whatever it was. He's done. He's shot. The bullpen shot. The team shot. The manager shot. The pitching strategist. Who knows what he does in the first place? You know what? Let the Mets take the bus, but instead of going north on the turnpike, set it at south on 95. Let the 69 Mets suit up for tomorrow night.
Francesca, why don't they send the 69 Mets back to Davey Johnson Land in Baltimore?
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely amazing to me. He called them a bunch of jokers, Francesca did.
An insult to all jokers in every deck of cards that may be.
You notice why the joke, if you pull out a deck of cards right now, the jokers are all scowling. I don't care what
and
deck.
They're all wearing blue and orange.
And if you, whether you go to Las Vegas, Atlantic City, or to some gambling den in Macau in China, or down in the Caribbean in Aruba, you pull the joker out of the pack, it's scowling.
It is.
Being compared to the Mets.
Now, Mr. Met should be a joker in a deck of cards.
Yeah. You know, it's very, very, very interesting. After his 2-minute rant, he apologized to Alonzo, McNeil, and DeGrom. But the rest
two
of them.
Two players to ask.
Yeah. And, you know, with Thor hurt and with some of the other Mets just not doing very well, I think it's a real, you know, this team is sinking slowly but surely.
And you know, Bill, it's interesting. And all joking aside, you know, Mike Francesa is just, you know, a luminary in the field, knows what he's talking about. And he knows that there are millions of Met fans that are devastated over this. And, you know, obviously, I'm devastated myself. You know, I'm 10 games behind the Yankees. Here I am, world champion, and I look terrible. But then again, you look up, I was in Fenway 3 weeks ago and saw the 2018 World Series Championship flag fly. You can justify it a little bit better. Some guys just aren't having a good year. I mean, the Sox are still 5-6 games over 500, and they're not totally out of it. But the bottom line with the Mets, I think, Bill, and I'd be interested to get your take on this, I think what it illustrates is that you must have balance. You have to have a balanced team. The Mets were constructed on the premise that we can have four flamethrowers and a good middle inning relief that will basically beat teams, you know, early on, and then even a mediocre bullpen will mop up. And what's happened is you've had injuries to the big starters, and some of them have just not, you know, played up to par. You've had middle relievers who've done well. You've had hitters in spots who have done well in spots, but basically not enough offense most of the time, and a bullpen, as I said, blown the most saves in the majors. And, Bill, don't you think it really stands for the proposition that you don't necessarily have to have the best, but you have to have a balanced team? I mean, you take the Yankees right now, pretty much right now the gold standard. Houston, people in Houston might dispute that, but because Houston has an excellent, well-balanced team too. The Yankees just have so much offense and can send the ball out of the park. The thing that worries them is the same thing that's worried them the last couple of years.
Pitching.
That is, when you get in the postseason and you're facing the best pitchers, you may not hit home runs. And that is the one thing they may need to address before the end of the year.
Well, you may
remember, they just were relying on four people to carry the rest of the team.
And you can't do that in baseball.
And you can't do that.
Well, remember, the Yankees learned how to play the small ball while their big hitters like Judge and Stanton were injured. And so you had DJ LeMahieu who came up out of nowhere and led them.
Put pinstripes on, and my God.
Suddenly, he was a world beater. He was another Lou Gehrig.
And some franchises are like that, Bill.
And look, you know, at Greg Bird and Luke Voigt.
When the Boston Celtics traded for Robert Parrish back in the 70s, people said, who was this guy? And he came in, fit into the system, put the green and white on, and they win championships. You know, some franchises can pick up marginal players. The Raiders did that for years. But they basically took cast-offs from other teams who were very good players but had an attitude problem. And they said, you're welcome in Oakland because you've got talent, you can play. But the Yankees and the Celtics come to mind as the two teams where they took guys with questionable, even marginal talent and got them to perform over and above expectations. How do you do that, Bill?
Well, you know, some people say there's a certain amount of magic in the Yankee Stadium image.
You have the leprechauns in the Boston Garden floor, and you got the ghost of Babe Ruth in, well, New Yankee Stadium. He moved over. But you're right.
Yeah, and, you know, we used to joke that some of the hot dogs cooking in Yankee Stadium in the food court had been left over that the Babe somehow managed to miss. But, you know, there was something to that. The interesting thing is, what do the Mets do now? I think the Mets let...
I think Mike Francesa is correct, and I've heard this from a number of different sources, that basically they should melt it down, which really means, Bill, that they should do what they didn't do last year. Last year, they had all kinds of offers for their top pitchers, resisted. And a lot of people speculated it was a mistake because they need so much to make that team good that by the time you rebuild that team, those pitchers would have passed
their prime. Oh, yeah, exactly.
So they probably should have unloaded pitchers last year.
You think they should have?
Having that top talent that would be getting it done now.
And you know something? They should also be stockpiling draft choices.
Yep,
they should be looking at the teams with good minor league systems because, you know, Zach Wheeler, how many more years is he going to be good?
Yep, yep.
I think the rest of the team's going to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, DeGrom is a great pitcher. He will never have more value than he does right now.
Exactly.
Actually, I think the most value he had was at the end of last year. They should have let him go there. There were talk that some other teams were willing to let three top prospects and two draft picks go for this guy. How you don't do that deal is beyond me.
Well, here's what I see. Zach Wheeler spent all of last July wondering if he was going to get traded. This July, the trade deadline's in 32 days. I think Zach Wheeler is on the block. He's going to get traded. It wouldn't surprise me if he went to the Yankees, although I know the Mets hate to trade with the Yankees.
Yeah, probably.
But
not.
Clint Frazier is playing for the Mets.
Wheeler is probably going to go to one American League West team. And you know, the Mets aren't going to trade with the Yankees. They aren't going to trade with the Dodgers. Okay. And certainly nobody within their division. So I think it's more likely I could see Minnesota picking up, even Houston. To me, those are the big trading partners because Minnesota and Houston have top teams. I mean, they are
exactly
literally a player or two away from challenging the Yankees.
Well, not only that, I think the Yankee pitching is suspect. But you know what a Yankee fan I am.
The problem is they'll hold up the end. Why would the Yankees
will it hold up?
Go with what they have because their hitting is so strong that the problem is you can't win 8-6 in the postseason.
No.
So you maybe need one more pitcher. You maybe need one. And you might have to lose one of those assets in the bullpen.
I like Zach Wheeler. I think Zach Wheeler can pitch.
I think you're right. I think he would be a good fit with the Yankees and be a good fit with Houston, Minnesota. If you are the Mets, you dangle him out there, and I think you get a pick and a top prospect for him. You get premium value. You make those teams overpay for a Zach Wheeler, and you throw a DeGrom out there. Why not? This team is not going to be good for two or three more years. By then, DeGrom would have lost his supremacy. To me, this is a no-brainer.
Well, I agree with you.
The Mets with two pitchers, Wheeler and DeGrom, you could restock the organization. You could get a top closer, a hitter, a couple of prospects, top picks. I mean, you could get seven players for those, or picks for those two guys. Okay, and I think you have to do it if you're the
Mets. Well, you have a point, but I want to shift a little bit because it's going to be on our radar screen soon, football. What's your take on Eli Manning's understudy?
Well, Bill, that is the big question and probably certainly one of the top 10 questions in all of the NFL going into the season. You know, they pick him at number 6, and I think, now, if it doesn't work out and he turns out to be another Dave Brown, the Giants and Dave Gettleman are going to be heavily criticized. It'll cost Gettleman his job. But if they have the courage of the convictions. Everybody thought Jones might go between 10 and 20. Well, you know what, Bill? If you're in the first round, you're in the top half of the first round, what do you really care if you pick him 6th or 13th? Okay, you get the man you want. You think he's going to do it. So, all right, do some people project him as a 15th pick and you're going to use the 6th pick? Others have speculated they could have traded down, picked up another high pick, traded the 6th pick, gotten maybe a 12th pick plus another 3rd, 4th round pick. But what if you lose him at that point? To me, I think the Giants did the right thing. He is the kind of kid, he's coachable, he's an Eli Manning clone. The Giants have won with Eli Manning. There's a certain type of player they want in that organization. Beckham, as you brought out before, was an anomaly for the New York Giants. They got rid of him. They got rid of a couple of other players who were marginal talent-wise and were questionable character-wise. So I think you're seeing the Giants rebuild with a big, strong guy. There's no question about his size and strength. You got Eli there for perhaps 2 years to coach him along. I think the Giants are going to be okay with this kid, Bill. Now, does he have Carson Wentz kind of talent? Probably not. I think Wentz has got a little better arm. But, you know, we all know that's the top question in the NFL. If Wentz comes back and stays healthy, you know, the Eagles
have to be, along with the Rams, your top two picks to win the NFC.
Oh,
if
I don't
Wentz
doubt that.
If Wentz gets hurt again, it's over. And, you know, with Jones, you have to look at a fresh guy coming out, never had a major injury, big, strong guy. He has a big back in the backfield, okay, who was the rookie of the year. This guy can fly, great talent. The defense has been rebuilt, not entirely, but substantially better. And the receiving core is good, but not great.
You know something? You left one very important thing out. I agree with everything you said, but let's talk about the improvement in the Giant offensive line. We know we got Nate Solder back, Walker Hernandez back, John Halapio, Chad Wheeler, and Spencer Pooley. And then they add Kevin Zeitler and Mike Remmers. So these are experienced blockers and pass protectors.
This line for the running game to step up and help this young quarterback.
Exactly. I was very surprised that the Browns traded Zeitler to the Giants, but
well,
I guess you had to get something for
Beckham.
And
they were only giving up the 17th pick.
Right.
Beckham is worth three players.
Exactly.
They gave up the 17th pick, and the other one was the offensive line.
And, you know, the interesting thing is none of these guys on the Giants line are pro bowlers, but you know what?
You don't need pro bowlers.
They don't need them if you got Saquon Barkley and Eli Manning. He now has a two-lane highway to himself. Both Solder and Remmers, who had surgery, are going to be ready to rock and roll. And Halapio showed at center. He was good. Then he got hurt. I think he's a rising star. I think Hernandez is a real bull. His rookie year was filled with some very encouraging signs, and he learned how to process life on the interior of an NFL line. And, you know, he's all business on the field, and he's got a little bit of a nasty edge.
They have been so bad the last 5 years. All right, they won a couple Super Bowls, beat the Patriots and the Shady Bradys, but, you know, the last 5 years have been an extreme disappointment. You're in New York. This is, again, like whether you're the Mets, whether you're the Rangers, you're the Knicks. I mean, you got bad teams in the second-best city in the world.
That's right.
Of course, in the best city in the world, Boston, you got all champions. But, you know, that swings, and, you know, you're looking for the New York teams to rebound. I think the Giants have to lead the way, even though I call them a New Jersey team.
Do you think the Giants can go 8-8?
You know what, Bill? I think the Giants will win at least six games. With a little bit of luck, they could win nine, go 9-7, probably not make the playoffs.
That's probably true. And you know what I think? I think if they're out of it by December, the second game in December, we're not going to see Eli Manning throw too many balls. And
I think they're going to start the season trying to solidify that line, the running game. I agree with you. I expect the Giants to be a run offense, run-oriented offense, which will open up the passing game a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting. You've got Sterling Shepard. You've got a new guy in Russell Shepard, both, running wide receivers, rather, good ball players. Russell Shepard was just re-signed this offseason. He is going to make the Giants look better. The other thing that's exciting to me is Jabril Peppers, a safety that the Giants got for Beckham.
He's a pretty good player.
He's a talented guy.
Yeah. By getting rid of Beckham and a very high priced defensive lineman who had a great first year for them in Vernon, they have replaced those guys with four very good players.
Well, that's true. I'm not crazy about Golden Tate. I don't know enough about him to really talk to him.
For that. That, to me, was a surprise. Yeah. I think that was a bit of a panic move.
That could be. I think he's a journeyman. I think he's got some skill. Certainly he's an NFL guy, but I don't think he is going to be the go-to guy. I can see Manning or his understudy dumping the ball off to him. You've got a tight end in Evan Engram, who I really do not know much about either, but maybe you've studied his play. Not much to say there, huh?
Not really, Bill. I'm not sure how to respond to that. Again, I love football. Anxiously await the season. I'm excited for the Rams. Never been one of my favorite teams, but it's a team you have to like. They came out of nowhere, turned it around, got some nice players there. They were just too young and inexperienced to beat the Patriots. The Patriots walked onto that field knowing they were going to win that Super Bowl. The Rams walked on the field and looked across the sideline and said, oh, my God, there's the big, bad Patriots. And I think they will, this year, just absolutely rededicate themselves to making up for that experience they didn't have last year. And I believe they are my pick. I think the Rams will get it done. Does Brady have one more in him? You know, we've been saying for the last 3 years, no, and he's won two of the last three. So you never want to bet against the guy until he's 6 feet under. And at this point, God knows when that's going to be.
Well, we've got a little bit of show left, about 2 minutes. John, what sort of things do we want to talk about?
Well, again, Bill, although it's a little bit of a mismatch, we are excited for historic groundbreaking baseball in London between the Yankees and the Red Sox. I think it'll be a competitive series, although, you know, the Sox are 10 games behind. Whenever you put the Sox and the Yanks together, you saw that last year when the Red Sox were setting records, the Yankees were 10 behind, and the Yanks were still, you know, fighting hard. So I'm looking forward to baseball this weekend in London, Bill. Hopefully it won't rain.
Well, you know, it rains a lot in England, and it rains an awful lot in the United Kingdom. Folks, it's almost 6 o'clock. We're getting ready to wish you a great weekend. We're about a minute away from getting kicked off the air with our rewind, so I'm going to wish everybody a great weekend. Watch out for that heat. Watch out for those heavy rains that are coming. Some days it feels more like Southeast Asia than it does Central New Jersey with the heat and the rain. But what I'm going to tell you folks is get up off that couch and let's enjoy the sunshine in between the raindrops. How about you, John? What do you think for our listeners?
Go Red Sox!
Well, I'm going to say go Yankees, and hopefully the Red Sox will have had too heavy a dose of fish and chips and Watney's Red Barrel Ale, and not be able to keep up with our Yankees this weekend. But, you know, it's going to be interesting watching baseball at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning. So, folks, get up off that couch. Have a great weekend. This is Bill Wolfson and
John Manfreda. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, folks. Have a wonderful time. We'll see you next week.
We need people that will either volunteer to do fundraisers. We're looking for $5,000 to pour this sculpture in bronze. This sculpture will be placed on plaques, and we will use it to raise funds for a special foundation that will help to pay the medical bills of retired military working dogs. Let me give you an example. When my dog retired, he was about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed that we need people that will either volunteer to do fundraisers. We're looking for $5,000 to pour this sculpture in bronze. This sculpture will be placed on plaques, and we will use it to raise funds for a special foundation that will help to pay the medical bills of retired military working dogs.